Terry Gross is the best interviewer in the United States. I've got to say it. For those of us who interview people for a living, she is the most admired of our peers. Terry Gross's Fresh Air began as a local radio show in Philadelphia more than 20 years ago at what's now member station WHYY. Now she's culled more than 30 interviews from the more than 5,000 she's done over the last generation. Her book is called All I Did Was Ask. Let's go to Terry Gross, who joins us from Philadelphia. Terry, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, Scott, thank you so much for what you've just said.
You write that in your interviews, you have to violate every rule of polite conversation.
That's correct. For example, when I'm interviewing somebody who has, I was interviewing a musician who was making his comeback, and he has this big gap in his teeth, and I thought, this guy was homeless for a while, he was addicted for a while. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that missing tooth has a story to tell about that. So of course, I asked him about that, and there was a story, but if you think that when I meet people, I say to them, hi, nice to meet you. Hey, how about that missing tooth? I bet there's a story behind that. I mean, that would just be so rude and so inappropriate. I would never dream of doing that. But I don't know if you feel this way, Scott, but I just behave really differently around people when I'm meeting them in a different context.
At this point in your career, do you ever meet anyone in a different context?
I hardly meet anybody. the sad truth of my life is that I spend just about all of my time reading, watching videos, and listening to music. Mm-hmm. I rarely go to parties unless it's a more professional event. So the truth is, I don't know what I'm talking about because I never meet people. My life is intellectually adventurous, but in the physical world, I'm almost always in a chair reading or watching or listening.
Do you mind talking about the early days for you in Buffalo? What was that show you did called?
Well, I did two shows in Buffalo. The first was called Woman Power, and it was a feminist program. I started working on it in 1973 or 1974, and it was a program with two goals. One was to do good consciousness-raising programming, but the other was to train women in radio. There were so few women in radio, either on the air or in the control room or in editorial positions, and the truth is, back then, there were very few women in the media in general. And so the women's movement was getting largely interpreted by men and often misinterpreted by them. So it was a thrilling time to start in radio because we had a mission. And then after that, I did a show called This Is Radio. And This Is Radio was a three-hour show 5 days a week that kind of became the model for what was the local version of Fresh Air.
Who was listening in those days?
Oh, probably about 10 people, 12 maybe.
Could you name them?
Yeah, I probably could. I think that's the only reason why I have a career in radio is because in the days when I got started, there were so few people listening, it didn't matter that I had no idea what I was doing and that I sounded like I was probably about 12. If public radio had the kind of audience it had now, there's no way I would have learned on the air in the way that I did back in the 70s.
Have to ask you about your interview with Uta Hagen.
Yes.
She just didn't want to play, did she?
No, and this really shocked me. Uta Hagen, the late Uta Hagen, was a revered actress and acting teacher. So, of course, I will talk to her about the craft of acting.
In one of your books about acting, you talk about how you can't be inert on stage. Have you thought about that a lot, what it is you're doing when you're...
I'm
really
going to interrupt
anything.
You right now.
Go ahead.
Because, again, everything you're discussing, you have read. It interests you. Are you an actor?
No, I'm not.
Then it's none of your business.
She was afraid that when actors talk about the craft of acting or what they do to prepare for a role, that makes everybody in the audience think, that sounds easy. Bet I can do it, too. And I think also there was an element that she thinks the magic is ruined if you dwell overly on the craft of it. But of course, I disagree with her, and I think a lot of my interviews are very craft-oriented because for me, the more I understand about craft, the richer the experience is for me. I mean, for instance, I took clarinet lessons for a couple of years. I was a lousy clarinetist. I never got good at it. It's a really hard instrument. But I hear the instrument differently than I ever did because I understand more about how it works. I mean, I hear music in general differently because of that experience.
I want to ask you about your interview with Divine.
Yes.
You asked Divine, as I think almost any interviewer has to, about the famous scene in Pink Flamingos where he eats dog excrement. But you had the wit to ask him not just how did you ever bring yourself to do that, but what happened afterwards?
Anyway, I went home, and the more I thought about it, then I started to worry. So I called the hospital, and I didn't know what to tell them, you know, because I was a bit old running around eating dog feces, you know. So I called, and I said, oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson, and my son just ate dog duty, and what should I do? And she said, well, how old is your son? And I said, well, he's, you know, 24 years old. Well, then the nurse got, she said, some maniac's on the phone here. Her son's 24 and he's eating dogs. So I got back on the phone. She said, well, why? And I had to tell her, well, I said that he was retarded. And she said, well, you just have to wash his mouth out and, you know, do all this. She said, but feel his stomach every day because he could get what was called the, you know, like a worm, a white worm. And every day I was feeling my stomach to see if it would. Finally, one day it got hard, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got it. But I had hysterical white worms, as it was. I didn't have anything.
And I asked this because, being a bit of a hypochondriac, I thought if I had to eat a fresh dog turd in a movie, I would imagine I was coming down with every illness known to man.
As you note this book, most people that you interview are not in the same studio as you are. And, you know, there are lots of people out there who believe, well, a face-to-face interview must make for a greater sense of intimacy. But you don't share that.
Well, I think sometimes it does, but it doesn't necessarily. I'm usually long distance with my guests. And, Scott, you and I are long distance now. I'm in Philadelphia. You're in Washington. And the nice thing about that is that it's pure radio. Anything they want to tell me or I them has to be communicated through our voices. So there's no smiles and winks and nods that we're sending to each other that the listeners aren't privy to. The other thing is, being a bit of a coward, when it comes time to ask tough, challenging questions, I find it a little easier to just go ahead and ask it when I'm not looking at the person trying to stare me down or looking really offended or hurt or whatever. And there's times when you just have to go ahead and ask that tough question.
I have to ask you about the Bill O'Reilly interview.
Yes.
And you write about that a little bit in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it, with the advantage of what's it been, a year of hindsight?
Yes.
What do you think happened in that interview? We for those people that don't remember either the news accounts or the actual interview on Fresh Air, Bill O'Reilly took offense to the tone, the general point of many questions, and ended the interview and walked out.
Right. I hesitate to answer this only in the sense that I don't want to characterize his motivations because I can't presume to know what they were. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I will say I've asked myself this question many times. He did say on his radio show, referring to me, that he didn't care about that dopey woman or her dopey show, but he just wondered why should he be paying for it. And I think it's possible that part of the reason why he came on was to make that point. I had invited him on because we had on Al Franken after the book Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them was published, and he devotes a chapter in that book to Bill O'Reilly. So we thought, well, it's only fair to invite on Bill O'Reilly. I was just reading a review of your new book in People magazine. Did you see this one?
I see them all.
Yeah. Okay, so the reviewer said, after he reviewed your previous book, he tuned into your show and heard you ridiculing him.
Right, because he reviewed me, not the book.
I'll read what the People magazine thinks.
Why? Why read it?
I guess I want people to hear it.
Why?
No,
this isn't the review of the
book. It's the review of how you handled it. And I think
it doesn't make
any
difference.
It's okay to ask you to be accountable for the things
accountable
that you said.
Accountable for what? You know, I came on this program to talk about who's looking out for you. And what you have done is thrown every kind of defamation you can in my face. All right, did you do this to Al Franken? Did you? Did you challenge him on what he said?
We had a different interview.
Yeah, a different interview, okay? Fine. Is this what Fresh Air is? I think we all know where you're going with this,
well,
don't we?
Jeffrey Dvorkin, who's NPR's ombudsman, wrote an analysis of the interview. And he said, I agree with the listeners who complained about the tone of the interview. Her questions were pointed from the beginning. She went after O'Reilly. He winds up by saying, I believe the listeners were not well served by this interview.
I disagree in the sense that, you know, keep in mind this interview was long before Al Franken had his own radio show, or long before Air America existed. And Al Franken comes from a 30-year history of writing satire and comedy for Saturday Night Live and other places. Bill O'Reilly, on the other hand, was one of the most powerful and tough, confrontational interviewers in the United States. I think you deal with O'Reilly a little differently. I mean, as I always say, different kind of interviews require different kind of interview styles. And when you're dealing with a combative interviewer, I think it's only appropriate to ask some tough questions about his style.
Terry, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Terry Gross, Her new book is All I Did Was Ask, Conversation with Writers, Actors, Musicians, and Artists. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.